Blog Talk Radio.
The interpreter's interpretation, it says, he that seeks after his own safety, the same shall lose it. But he that will give up his safety for my sake, the same shall find his life. Place yourself in God's hands, and it always goes better for you, even if some people think it went worse. It's not always easy to see. We have the story of Simon the sorcerer. He saw the great miracles they're doing, and he wanted a piece of that action for himself. And he pretended to be a believer of sorts, and he tried to pay them to give him the power. He thought it was that kind of a thing. The power is given to those who are plugged in to God. It is not something that you have and you can give portions of it away and receive money for it or anything like that. And when they spoke to him, you have misunderstood and you're in trouble with God. Oh, well, yeah, okay, and off he went. Didn't really change him. We find there are many cases in the Old Testament where people sought to do things their way. Moses was challenged how many times if you read the story when they left Egypt? His own sister, who danced and was great, became condemned because of her attitude towards Moses, God's servant. When some people who challenged Moses, they did it with the kind of attitude, well, Moses isn't the only one that hears from God. We do too. We hear from God, so why should you have the final word? And God called them together in assembly, and he told them, some of you understand me through dreams and impressions, but to Moses I speak lip to lip. Yes, you know something of me, but Moses knows me. And there are many people who know something of God, but they don't know him. They know something. Then there were those who opposed Moses when in actuality they were opposing God. And God understood the difference. The ground opened up and swallowed a lot of them, again causing much fear amongst the people. That you don't lightly challenge the work that God is doing. It isn't so much that they challenge Moses, but it is something that they challenge God. And they wanted to go back to Egypt, where they had leeks and onions and many things to eat and good things. Better to do that than to die out here. Why? Again, looking for the bread. Looking for that something that we, that comfortable life, that easy life. In recent times, probably shouldn't have been watching it, but I was kind of watching one of these Harry Potter films. And there was a quote made by the headmaster. It says, we must face the choice between doing what is right and what is easy. And that is the choice we all have as Christians. To do what is right is not going to be the popular thing amongst a lot of people, and including even some of our fellow Christians. When we want to stand, when we want to say things, when we look on in the Old Testament, there were two tribes of Israel, the Manasseh and Gad. They didn't want to go into the promised land to get land there because the land looked pretty good on this side of the river. Why should we go over on that side of the river and take land? We don't know what's over there, but this place is pretty nice. We should take this. And Moses allowed it. On the condition, of course, that they went in with the rest of the tribes to help them fight and take the land that was theirs, which they agreed to. But they didn't want to trust God. The rest of the tribes received their land by holy lot. No, we want, hey, this is nice. Let's talk Moses into giving us this. They settled for what was easy, not for what God wanted them to have necessarily. I don't see that as a very good thing to have done, but they did it. It is easy to see that many people in the Bible sought for that which was easier to their life than to choosing perhaps the direction that God wanted them to go in. When Ruth came out with her mother-in-law, the chance was also offered to her sister-in-law, but she finally went back to her people. Because it was easier to follow the gods which she'd been raised with, the people which she'd been raised with, than it was to take a chance of going with Naomi back into Israel and not knowing what that future would bring. But Ruth, to her, it wasn't a matter of choosing the bread, choosing her, the gods that she'd been raised with. She had come to know who the God of Israel was. To her, it was a matter of following God. When she was told by Naomi, you might as well go back to your people, it'd be easier. She said, no, I'm going where you're going, and your God shall be my God. I'm not going anywhere except with you. I believe that's what God would have me do. And she made that choice, the hard choice, not knowing where that it would end up. You have many relationships in the Bible that show where people try to get ahead of God. What does getting ahead of God mean? It means that this is a likely good direction, I'm going to do it. Did you ask God? Well, it's a good thing. Must be God. Why must it be? What did Brother Taylor used to say? God's good can be the enemy of God's best. Can it not be? Yes, you can have many good things because God gives us blessings and we rejoice in those blessings. But don't settle into them. See them for what they are. See them as the blessings that continue in our life, but God will say there, but the road goes on, now go. And you have to trust God is going to bless you in those directions also. But don't be so satisfied with the blessings that you just settle in where you are. That's all you want out of it. God is not asking us to settle in. He's asking us to look at who is the provider, receive the blessing with thanks, but also look to receive a new direction if God so chooses it. It's a time to go on. We're coming into an area in time when Christianity is coming into much disfavor. I recently watched a series done on television about the Holy Land and the different peoples and how they say there's no record of Moses, there's no record of the Israelites being slaves in Egypt, there's, you know, no record that Jericho existed at the time that Joshua supposedly brought the walls down. There's no record of this. There's no record of that. What do I care what their record says? This is record enough for me right here. They can make all the pronunciations they want about how we can't prove a lot of the Bible. Well, there's a certain portion of the Bible where, yes, we can say it's pretty descriptive of things and we find evidence for it, but primarily these people are thinking that the tribes of Israel were not in bondage and that Moses did not exist and just, you know, a whole bunch of nonsense. To me, it was interesting to watch and there were some nice pictures there and all, but it's an attack on faith anyway, no matter what they want to say. The world does not receive faith. They do not live in faith. They live by their own measurement of what is just and what is right. And that can change from time to time. We have to have the standard in our life that we stand for God. We live for our brothers and sisters. And that we want to follow where God leads us. In 1 John 3:16, not to be confused with John 3:16, and hereby perceive we the love of God, that he laid down his life for us, so ought we lay down our lives for the brethren. That I've always liked as a verse. And I remember teaching a Bible school in the Philippines. I had a young man in my school class who was very Calvinistic Baptist. Oh, he knew his John 3:16, all right. And he didn't mind letting you know. So when I gave a final question on a test, when I said, open your Bibles to 1 John 3:16 and write me a short essay on how that might be applied in your life, I knew he would never get there. I knew I would have a 2 or 3 page essay from him on John 3:16, but not on 1 John 3:16. And I was laughing to myself because I knew it. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened. He didn't read the question good enough. He didn't open the Bible. I know that verse. And he wrote me a 3 or 4 page essay on John 3:16. I was gracious to him. I could have failed him, but in a sense, I wanted him to learn something. I wanted him to learn that when you're taking a test, especially if it says open the Bible and read, make sure you're reading the verse that it says for you to read. And Everybody in the school laughed at that one. He was sort of embarrassed because he didn't quite get it right. But that particular verse has been a very strong life thing for me. We are supposed to work with the brethren, for the brethren. And we lay down our lives. Does that mean we physically go out and say to somebody, shoot us? No. That means we choose not to pursue a life of our own. We choose not to follow the bread. We choose to sacrifice ourselves for the sake of others, to encourage others, to bring others along, to speak into their lives when they are wrong. When we can see what is going wrong in their life, do we just stand back and say, wow, look at what they're doing? Don't they know? Well, maybe they don't know. Maybe you've got the insight from God about what's going on there, and you need to speak into their lives about it. That's part of laying down your life for the brethren. Well, they won't like me very much if I go up and say that to them. Yeah? So? More important, God likes you. He loves you. But he loves them too. And he knows that they need you. They need what you can say to them, what you can be an example of in their lives. And don't assume they can just look at you and your life and get by on example all the time. Part of that example is your being able to speak into their life when they are blowing it. And hopefully at some point in the future they could do that for you. There was a story about St. Francis of Assisi I always thought was pretty good. When people began to see what this man was doing, and they became moved by it, there was a knight who began to give up everything to follow in this order that St. Francis had established. And he was very wealthy. And he was using the advice of Francis on how to not just dump what he had, but to get rid of it in a good way. And there was another man who had had business with this knight. And he came to him and he said, in that business we had, you never gave me enough. I need this much more to satisfy that. It was a lie. And it was much more than what the service had been provided was worth. But this knight, on St. Francis' advice, gave it to him. He said, just give it to him. Don't worry about it. So he gave this large amount to this man who had lied. And the man who lied became so stricken in his heart about what he had done that he repented. And he not only got rid of that money that was given to him, he began getting rid of his stuff and joined with St. Francis and became such a wonderful man in his walk with God that Francis often sought him for advice. And that's what struck me. Just because you start out one way in the dark, following after the bread, doesn't mean you have to continue to do that. God is calling you. You can walk in the direction God calls you and become a changed individual. You're no longer that person that you were. Redemption is always a good story, no matter how it comes to us. When we look back in the Bible, there are those who walk real strong with God, then they get a little weak and walk real strong, Hezekiah being one of those. God extended his life past a sickness, and then he got visited by the Babylonians. Look at what I've got, what God has given me. You don't ever do that. You never brag on what you have or what you got. You're very quiet. Jesus spoke to us, don't do as the Pharisees do and have callers go beyond the cities and gates and yelling and screaming about this man gave this to help these people. Your giving is to be quiet. Your giving is to be between you and God. Because your reward is from him, not from the adulation of other people. Adulation comes and goes pretty fast. And what bothers me in this day and hour is the people who are being admired in our society are horrible, corrupt people, morally, spiritually, and everything else. And yet our children are being taught to emulate them, to want to buy the clothes that they wear, to want to be in their fan club, to want to do all of these kind of things. I don't think this is quite right. I kind of think we have to analyze the walk that we have with God as individuals, our walk with our family as it relates to God, and we have to make choices and decisions that our children are not going to like. When my girls were young, I think Leah was already a teenager and Ruthie was fast approaching. I sat them down one day and I said, I want to tell you what I've decided about dating. Very important you listen to me. I said, the dating rules in this house are very simple. Never under my roof is it going to happen. I said, you're allowed to hang out with groups of kids and no boys through groups, but I will have no boy calling you individually and taking up your time and spending an hour or more on the phone. Not going to happen. Now, some say I was strict, but I learned it from a very good friend of ours that I'm sure you know, Jerry Buscher. He did that with his children as well, boys and girls. When he explained to me the need for that and why that was, I said, that makes such sense to me that I implemented that same policy. I wouldn't have thought of it if I hadn't learned it from him. Others will say, well, that's horrible. You can't do that. Why not? Most of the young men out there who would be pursuing my daughters aren't Christians anyway, and I don't know what's on their mind, but it's not what's on my mind. I have no problem with that. I don't mind them meeting my kids in a group and sitting down and talking, getting to know each other a little bit. But they don't need private time with them, either through a date or through the phone. That was the choice I made. And my wife didn't have a problem with it, and my kids didn't really have a problem with it. Their job was to get through school. That was the whole deal. There'd be plenty of time after they got older. Although I will say that Leah was sort of afraid of boys in a way. And so when a young man began to take interest in her as she got older, she didn't want to know what to do about it. He just wouldn't let her go. He would be to eat lunch with her at Pinecrest. He joined a reenactment group that she belonged to and I was in just so she could be near her. And then she says to me, what do I do? This guy just won't leave me alone, Dad. And I says, well, give him a chance. Get to know him. And she married him. She was 23 and he was 21. They've been married 7 years now. Ruthie, on the other hand,